You're listening to The Forgotten Podcast, bringing voice to the foster care community.
We as adoptive parents of kids of color have got to be aware of these things, that our kids are going to experience the world in a different way, and that we have to be able to have those conversations with them that say, I'm a safe person for you to talk to about these things. Otherwise, they're just not going to. If they don't think we'll understand, if they don't think we're seeing these things from their perspective, or at least trying, then it's going to be hard for them to feel safe enough to talk to us about those things.
Welcome back to The Forgotten Podcast, where we are bringing voice to the foster care community. I'm your host, Jamie Cabe, and today marks Season 1, Episode Number 3. You are going to love today's interview with Marilee Bradley. Marilee is mom to 6 kids, 9 and under. Yes, you heard that right. 4 of her kids were adopted, 1 internationally from Liberia, and 3 through foster care. And 2, as she puts it, they made themselves. Marilee blogs regularly at AmusingMarilee.com on topics like adoption, foster parenting, and infertility. She also guest posts and contributes to many foster care and adoption-related blogs and magazines, including our very own blog at The Forgotten Initiative. We covered a bunch of topics on today's interview, from helping our kids deal with racism to big family tips and all things in between. Seriously, my friends, you are going to love this. So without further ado, here is my interview with Marilee Bradley. All right. Marilee Bradley, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm looking forward to talking with you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're having me on.
I want to just let folks get to know you a bit before we dive into some of our questions. So tell us a little bit about your family, what led you to foster care, to adoption.
Yes. My husband and I, actually, before we ever knew we were going to be adopting, or before we knew we had infertility issues, we pursued group home work. We'd been married like 9 months. I literally graduated college the day before, and then we went and interviewed this group home because we wanted to be involved with kids. That was our hope and our goal. So we ended up being house parents in a boys' home for 5 years, and we primarily had boys ages 6 to 18, a lot of older teen boys over the years. Over that 5-year period, we had 17 boys. So that was our kind of trial by fire, our being dropped in the deep end of loving kids that come from hard places, that have a trauma background, and being involved in their families. And during that time, we found out that we had an infertility issue, which was a big surprise to us, but also made sense from a God perspective that, yeah, we had hearts for these kids. This, we could do this. We could adopt, we could foster, we could love other people's children. So while we were doing group homework, we ended up pursuing international adoption and adopted our first child from Liberia, West Africa, when he was 10 months old. So after that, we ended up leaving group homework, and we felt like we loved working with those kids. We also realized because of the environment we were in, the way they were placed in the group home, we could never offer them permanency. And we just realized what a gift permanency is to kids, to know that they have a place they can forever call home. Even, I mean, if that's their biological home, that's great. The kids in our group home environment just didn't know if that was going to be their biological home, or if they were going to be, I mean, they didn't have the option of adoption. And we just felt like that put them in this limbo that was really devastating for everyone. So we decided to do foster care after that point, that was more traditional foster care. And we ended up being placed, the day our license came in the mail, we got a phone call about an infant in the NICU that needed a family. We ended up visiting him for 2 weeks in the NICU before he was released. And then he came to our home, and 17 months later, we adopted him. While he was with us, we got placed with a 5-month-old baby. And about 2 years later, we were able to adopt her, had a surprise biological child.
Oh, that wow. Was
shocker. We were not pursuing that at all by that point. And when he was about 2, we took placement of another infant, and almost a year later ended up adopting her. None of these things did we anticipate ahead of time. We got into foster care envisioning, you know, being able to reunify these kids with their families, but God had a different plan for them. And so we've been able to see, after doing the really temporary side, we've been able to see that long-term permanency side and what that looks like. After we adopted our last foster daughter. 2 weeks later, we gave birth to our last biological baby. So it was 6 kids in about 7 years from start to finish that has created our family.
Wow. So tell me the ages of your kids now.
This will be a good test. We've got a 9-year-old, 7-year-old, 6-year-old, 5-year-old, 2-year-old, 1-year-old.
Wow. Love it. So do you drink a lot of coffee like I do?
No. I was not a coffee drinker at all until our fourth child, and that did it. Like, that was, I could not do it anymore without a little help.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's great. What have you, did you ever expect to have a big family?
I'm a fourth child out of a family of 5 kids. And through our group home years, we did 4 kids was usually the smallest, and we'd have up to 8. So I felt equipped for a large family. I didn't know what God was going to do. And I definitely, when we found out we had infertility issues, I grieved, feeling like maybe that wasn't going to be God's plan for us, that maybe all we'd be able to do would be this one international adoption, and then that would be it. We just felt so uncertain about our ability to control our family size. But I knew in my heart I could do it, that I wanted to do it, that I felt like that was a skill set I had.
Wow, that's great. Can you talk to the person right now who is dealing with infertility, maybe has just gotten word from the doctor, or they've tried a bunch of things and they're really struggling? Can you speak to them?
Mm-hmm. I think it's so important to be able to grieve that loss separate from pursuing adoption or foster care, that it is an extremely painful thing. And if you quickly jump to the adoption idea as kind of a band-aid fix, then that child is going to come into your home with a job to do. He's going to come into your home with a need to fix you, to make you feel better, to feel like a mom. And it may not work that way, that they're going to come with their own needs, and that you've got to be in a real place of healing to be able to love that child well, to minister to that child. And if you're still really actively grieving the infertility process, that can complicate things. So if you've just gotten that word from the doctor, feel free to grieve, to go to the depths you need to go, to work through those things. There are options for becoming a parent that don't involve biology. They will be there for you when you get done with this process, but really embracing the sadness of that, feeling free to do that before considering the other options, I think is really wise.
That's good. Thanks for sharing that. I'm sure there's folks out there who that will really touch today. Tell me also, I'm just thinking big family dynamic. I mean, we have a big family. I didn't expect to have a big family. I love having a big family, but there's obviously challenges. But give us some of your best organizational tips that you've learned. Let's start just thinking about summertime.
Yes, we live and die by lists. That is the only way I feel like I know what's going on. The list is getting it out of my brain and putting it on paper. So like literally this morning we sat down and I had each kid tell me, what is the one thing we need to do this summer so that you will know you had a good summer? So somebody said they wanted to go to the county fair, and somebody wanted to go to the pool, and somebody wanted to go to the zoo, but just to get it all down there that way. And I'm not going to forget then that we got to the end of the summer and said, oh, shoot, we never did those things we wanted to do. This way we've got it down. But I feel like that's the way it goes for a lot of things. If we want to prioritize it, we've got to write it down. We've got to put it in the schedule. We've got to say, these are the things that are important to our family.
That's great. I love it. Okay, so let's go back to this foster care adoption experience. So tell us about the dynamic, the ethnic dynamic of your family now.
Yes, we have a very multiracial family. Our oldest son, as I mentioned, is adopted from West Africa. The next child we took placement of was an ICWA placement. He's a Native American child. Okay. Yes, Indian Child Welfare Act is what ICWA stands for. So when you take a foster placement of a child who's Native American, that should be made very clear to you up front, because there are special laws that govern the placement of children who fall under ICWA. So for him, it was very uncertain that we would be able to adopt him ever because of that extra set of laws that govern these specific kids. So our next placement after that was our daughter, who we didn't know at the time we took placement, has Mexican-American heritage. We found that out later after meeting her biological dad, and she is extremely proud of that. She loves it, and we love affirming that for her. And then our youngest daughter is biracial. She's African-American and white. So we have really a lot of diversity in our family, a lot represented that way, and our kids are all really proud of that. They really embrace it, and they love doing things that represent who they are and where they came from.
That's great. You speak a lot to race and the racial issues. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with your oldest son and some racial discrimination even? Is that what you've talked through, or expound on that?
Yes. I think a lot of us, when we get into adoption, are encouraged to have kind of a colorblind philosophy, like love is going to be enough and that's going to be what matters. And, you know, we're all the same on the inside. And while love does matter and we are all the same on the inside, the world is going to see our kids differently than they see us if you're a white parent with kids of color. That's just the way it is. And so we had for a long time been realizing that with our son, with our oldest son, that the world does see him differently, and that we were not doing him any favors by not preparing him for that, by not talking about those things. So we had to have those conversations. And I was really thankful for that, because we did end up having some issues at school this year with kids who were saying things that were just inappropriate. And our son knew that he could come talk to us, that we were going to listen to him and believe him. And then that those issues got addressed by his school, and they handled it extremely well. We were really thankful for how they dealt with it, that they took it very seriously. So we've been glad to see his community kind of get informed about these things as we've talked about them openly. But I think we as adoptive parents of kids of color have got to be aware of these things, that our kids are going to experience the world in a different way, and that we have to be able to have those conversations with them that say, I'm a safe person for you to talk to about these things. Otherwise, they're just not going to. If they don't think we'll understand, if they don't think we're seeing these things from their perspective, or at least trying, then it's going to be hard for them to feel safe enough to talk to us about those things.
Yeah, I can appreciate that a lot. Our kids, we have a very interracial family as well. And really, we will talk at the dinner table, like the kids will talk about, okay, who's the lightest? And then who's the darkest? And when we brought home Friday from Uganda, everyone's like, Friday wins. So we have every spectrum. But one of our little ones came home from school one time crying, and he said, you know, I heard a little boy say, white is good, brown is bad. And that's what, second grade, I think. And you don't know exactly what's all going on in that little boy's in life, and what he even really meant by it. But I know that it really bothered my child, of course, and it was very hurtful. And so to what you're saying is, you know, just to be able to be a safe place, I think, is huge.
Yes. And I think we've told our kids, our job as your parent is to believe you. We're going to believe you. We're going to take this to your teacher. We're going to take this to your principal. We're going to have these conversations. You've got to tell the truth, and we're going to believe you. We're not going to say, well, they didn't really mean it that way, or, you know, everybody says things. That's just not how it's going to go down. We have to be able to be your advocate in these situations where you may not feel safe.
Yeah, very good. All right. So as you know, started the whole foster care process, you said you did not expect to adopt. So how did you expect it to look, and what was your reality? And that's a huge question. So, you know, pick a piece of that.
Yes. We had spent a lot of years working with kids who were voluntarily placed in the group home environment. So dealing with the court system was new to us. And our impression of foster care, we were actually pursuing like domestic infant adoption with a separate agency while we were licensed to provide foster care, because we thought that's how you adopt. Foster care is temporary. So we got into it with this idea, we're going to be supporting a child, we're going to be supporting a family, and then, you know, we can be long-term support for them. And we're still in contact now with families that we worked with their kids, you know, just about a decade ago. So we wanted to be that kind of support for a family and to see reunification happen. So I didn't realize when we got into this and dealt with the specific situations where adoptions happened, how bittersweet that was going to be, how much we grieved for those families suffering this ultimate separation, when our hope had been to be able to support them, to see reunification happen. That even though, even in society, there's such a maybe an understanding of joy in adoption and a desire to celebrate those things. It was a little hard to celebrate for us when we knew the faces and the names of these families. When we adopted our first out of foster care, we asked about, you know, should we have contact ongoing with the birth family? And we were really told, like, why would you want to do that? You know, they're not capable of parenting. They're not in a good situation. You don't have to do that. And we just didn't listen. It was done. We hunted down names and addresses. You know, we sent cards. These people matter to our kids long term, and our kids have questions that we can't answer. So being able to create those connections with their biological family, even though reunification wasn't possible, that doesn't mean they don't matter anymore to our kids. They continue to have an impact on their lives. They want to know about their biological family, and we want to speak lovingly about them. So I think we got into this thinking reunification, thinking temporary. What ended up happening was long-term and permanency, but we've realized that either way, these families continue to matter. We don't shut the door on them. We value them and love them and speak positively about them and truthfully about them.
I love it. I like you. I think that, I mean, we really share that same heart, because I feel the same way. We love our kids as birth parents. And unfortunately, we don't know our kids that we adopted internationally. We don't know their birth parents. And then that presents challenges too. And yet to be able to know the birth parents of those we fostered and then adopted has been a real amazing thing, actually. And in fact, just yesterday, we went out to eat with them for the first time in many years. And to just see them, they're doing so good, and to see the light in their eyes and to be able to tell them, you guys, we are proud of you. And it's just really amazing to be able to have that opportunity to speak truth to them, because they are very special to us. They're special to our kids, like you said. And we told them, we said, we want you to know your kids, you know, our kids, all of our kids, they know why they came into foster care. But we're not speaking negatively of you, you know, and we speak with respect, and they love you, and they still love you, and they talk about you. And for them, that was so, I mean, they were just so grateful, because they realized they've made mistakes. And in fact, their birth dad said, you know, we finally grew up. And that's, you know, they've, to be able to just share those and talk to them about their kids and have them laugh about, oh my goodness, I was like that in school, or, you know, it was just an amazing, amazing opportunity. So
it's a huge balancing act to figure out, how do we speak positively and truthfully?
Absolutely.
For difficult reasons, they have hard stories, but we don't want them to be surprised by their stories. They need to be able to own their story. And our goal has always been to give age-appropriate truth to our kids, you know, and that's meant they have access to information other kids their age don't, that yes. They don't know about. But we want to be the ones that our kids know always told them the truth. There's no shock. At some point, our kids are going to have access to Google. They may be able to find their own records. They may absolutely. Be able to find things about their birth family. And we don't want them to be, you know, sitting in the public library getting this education, or sitting at school finding these things out. We want them to hear them from us, which means we have to have the hard conversations, but conversations that have a lot of love and grace for what their biological parents have gone through themselves.
Absolutely.
We have an interesting story, I think. When you go through international adoption first, I think we went into it wondering if we would be able to have a positive relationship with a biological family of our child. We'd had these kids that were temporarily ours, and we knew how to build relationships with their families, but all of a sudden it felt like, could we share a child? I didn't know. Like, I just wasn't sure how that would go. And we pursued international adoption thinking, well, we won't know anything. There is no birth family to get involved that way. And once we adopted our son, realizing that was not a benefit, that's a loss. That's a huge loss for him. And it's a huge loss for us. And I can't tell you how many times I wanted to share these beautiful moments with his first mother to mm-hmm. be able to tell her how amazing he is and how smart he is and how much we adore him. And not having that ability was a loss for us that propelled us into foster care to say, no, we want that option. We want the ability to build a relationship with that family. And I mean, the amazing thing for our story has been that we actually have been able to have contact with our oldest biological brother wow. who's still living in Liberia. It's ridiculous, but wow. to see how much loves that and how much they look alike and what a light he gets in his eyes talking about his brother. And for all of our kids to be able to have that birth family, except for my biologicals who are kind of disappointed. I had my four-year-old just this week was crying. Why don't I have a birth mother?
Oh my goodness, that is so funny.
Other kids tell him she is your birth mother. She's all of your mothers. Like it's the same thing, but he just feels so left out about it. Why don't I have an adoption day party? Like, sorry, that's not how it works.
I love it. Okay, so Marilee, you talked a little bit about sharing age-appropriate parts of their story. And of course, I'm not asking you to reveal any of their story, but can you give folks some tangible, maybe some milestones or just some specifics on how you did that? How you knew what to share, how much to share, kind of in what way to share, just so people can really kind of get a more better understanding of what that might look like for their family.
I think for us, the first questions came when our kids were about preschool age, and it was really a difficult question where they would ask, why was I adopted? And I think
at that point, we had the option of saying, your birth mother knew she couldn't raise you and she made a loving plan. And that is definitely part of the story. But for kids adopted from foster care, there is another part of that story that she may have tried to raise you and wasn't able to do that safely. So we would talk kind of in generalities like, well, why do you think maybe a mom wouldn't be able to take care of her child? And so out of that conversation would come like, well, what if she didn't have money to be able to take care of a child? What if she couldn't have a job or she didn't have a job? What if she didn't have a safe place to live? What if she was in jail? We have definitely had conversations about drug use, which is a hard one to go through with kids, but they are capable of understanding that. And I think the language we've used has been she may have put things in her body that were unsafe for her and made it unsafe for her to parent. They made her sick. They made it hard for her to make good decisions. So there's all that kind of language. And for some of them, it's been, you know, she wanted you to have a mom and a dad that lived together and she wasn't able to do that for you. It's been hard. And I think the conversations get more difficult as they get older and they're able to ask more specifics about it. It's tough. And the reality is too, that a lot of them, their birth parents' stories are works in progress. They're continuing to develop and maybe they get better post-adoption and maybe they get worse. And mm-hmm. those are questions we continue to answer honestly if they ask what's going on, how their birth parents are doing. We want them to know the truth about those things.
Yeah. So about what age do you feel like you're sharing a little bit more, or is it really dependent on their maturity level?
A lot of it is on the questions that they ask. And for some of my kids, they ask a lot of questions. They really want to know. They ask regularly. It seems like it's always when we're driving in the car. we're in a hurry to get somewhere, and then somebody's breaking down in the back crying about birth parent issues, and we got to pull over and deal with it. Huh. So we had a rough story one time. One of my kids asked about their biological father, and I had to give them some really hard, tough, personal answers. And I remember getting out of the car, and I'm just a mess. And we go into Target, and they asked for some specific toy, and it was just, yes, I don't even care. I will buy whatever you want. I'm emotionally traumatized right now. And they were fine, you know, but we feel the weight of all of this for them. But it is their story. And part of giving them that truthful information is also telling them that that story belongs to them, that we don't just give it away freely, and that they don't have to either. And that just because this has been a thing for my child who's now just finished third grade, that you don't have to tell your friends just because they ask. This is your story. There are ways for you to say that's private, that's personal, I don't want to talk about it. And some people, if you feel safe enough, of course you can do that, but you don't have to either. And that's not because it's shameful or bad or wrong. It's just private. And you have to decide when you want to give that information away.
Yeah. I'm going to forget the name of this resource, but I think it was called Wise Up, or there was something. I'm going to look it up and put it in the show notes. Do you know what I'm talking about? What's that called?
I think it is YZEB, Adoption Confidence for Kids. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. It kind of walks you through, helps the child walk through how different ways they can respond when they're asked questions that are maybe a little uncomfortable for them or just personal.
Yeah, yeah. I asked my son at one point, you know, what's hard about being adopted? And he said, well, I hate the stupid questions people ask. Well, what do you do when they ask stupid questions? He's like, I usually say, hey, it's not time for that. It's time for math right now. Like, you know what?
Perfect.
You do what you need to do. But I think, you know, for some of my kids, that's just a non-issue. For some of them, they feel offended by the questions. And for some of them, they love it. Like, they love to talk adoption and want to share their story everywhere we go. And, you know, we have to tell them discretion about those things. But we've been amazed at how individualized our kids have all processed their adoption stories, that it has not been a one-size-fits-all for them, that it's really been what they feel comfortable with. And we've had to learn from them how to handle it.
That's great. Well, Marilee, I have loved talking with you, and I know I would love to have you back on another time because I think we could just talk and talk and talk. But as we finish here, just speak to our audience. Give someone who is maybe thinking about becoming a foster parent, or maybe someone who's in the trenches. I know this is kind of two different ways to speak to them, so you can take some time. But talk to the one who's thinking about foster care, and then talk to the one who's in the midst of it and is really struggling and even feeling like maybe I just want to give up because it is too hard.
You can wrestle with the fear of it, the fear of the unknown, the fear of what happens if we just love this child and then they get pulled out of our home unexpectedly, or what if we love this child and love their birth family and the birth family just collapses, or, you know, what if we get accused of something we didn't do? There are so many fears that just keep people from committing. And I think what I've had to learn is that the peace of God, the wisdom of God, the comfort of God is not present for my worry about what's coming down the road. It's not there. When those things actually happen, that wisdom is there. That peace is there. So when I'm worrying about it, I'm worrying about it without any of the benefit of what God's actually going to do in those circumstances. And we've seen with our group homework, I mean, there were kids I just adored that I thought, if this child leaves, I'm going to fall apart. We're going to quit this job. Like, I'm never doing this again. And then in the moment when it actually happened, that peace of God was present and allowed us to have his perspective on it and not just fall apart and be able to say, all right, let's wash the sheets and somebody else is coming in here and we've got to re-up. And, you know, it's extremely difficult, but God is in it, which you just can't imagine that when you're just worrying about it. So I think if it's fear that's keeping you from doing this, just remember that God is bigger than that. He's going to have a purpose and a plan for what you do with foster care for the kids coming into your home. I mean, there is such a beauty and a joy that just outweighs all of that fear once you actually jump in. But that too is something you can't experience until you're actually doing it. I think for the foster parent that is struggling, there's so many ways to struggle as a foster parent. There's so many reasons why it can be difficult. I'm specifically thinking of a time we dealt with an 18-year-old who did not want to be parented. He had been parenting himself for a long time, and it was a struggle to have to be the authority in his life to try and develop a relationship with him. And I remember moments like just standing at my bedroom door and thinking, I don't even want to go out. Like, I don't, he's going to be standing right there. I know it, with like a list of complaints about me. Wow. I don't want to deal with this. And having to just take that step to open the door, to walk out, to love him. I am glad that I did that. His story does not have a happy ending as much as we love him. And we trust that God had a purpose in that. But I think our job was to be obedient. Our job was to be faithful. Our job was to love. That's all we can control. And I think when we're really frustrated with foster care, a lot of times it's because we realize our lack of control. We can't make the system do what we want. We can't make these kids do what we want. We can't make their families do what we want. And we start to fixate on those things instead of fixating on our job. What can we do today? How can we love these kids well today? And the more we can look at serving them faithfully and be obedient to what God's asked us to do, I think the more we don't have to struggle.
I want to say too, honestly,
there is a time to say, we cannot do this anymore. I want to be honest about that.
That's good.
I know The hardest kid we ever dealt with was 8 years old. It is not just about age or whatever, but he had some mental health issues that we were not capable of caring for. We just weren't with the setup we had. And we had to talk to the people we worked with, talk to the counselor we worked with, to say, we can't do it. And that was so much guilt that we weren't able to rescue this child, but having to release him and say, that's not our job. I mean, that's not, we can't rescue all of these kids. We can't save every single one. Sometimes you do have to say, we can't keep going. It's not best for them. It's not best for us. And obviously you make that decision with a lot of prayer, with a lot of support. You talk to the people you need to, you call in all your resources first. But I would hate for anyone to feel so much weight of unhealthy guilt that they keep going in a situation that is detrimental to everybody involved.
Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate that. I appreciate your honesty today and just for being on and sharing from your heart and your story. It's been a true pleasure. Thank you, Mary Lee. I really loved my conversation with Mary Lee. I will definitely have to have her on again. And I'd love to hear what you thought of today's episode. It really is a great encouragement to us to hear feedback from you. And if you have any questions or you have guests that you want to hear on the podcast or even topics, please share that. We'd love to know. If you haven't already, will you head on over to iTunes and subscribe? And when you do, please give us a rate or review as this helps more people see and hear this podcast. You can connect with us on Twitter at ForgottenPod or on our website, theforgotteninitiative.org. And there's always a great conversation going on over at Facebook and our other socials, Twitter and Instagram. We'd love to have you join us there. Just search The Forgotten Initiative. Now I just want to thank Mary Lee Bradley once again for joining me today. Make sure you head on over to her blog at AmusingMaryLee.com to hear more from her. And to our friends at Resonate Recordings, thank you as always for producing today's episode. And finally, if you want to start a ministry to the foster care community and don't want to reinvent the wheel, or you are leading a ministry in your church but feel isolated or stuck, we are here to help you. We at the Forgotten Initiative will resource you, support you, and network you with others doing the same thing. And the good news is we do it all for free. Look us up at theforgotteninitiative.org. Well, that does it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to being with you again very soon.
This podcast was brought to you by The Forgotten Initiative. Learn more at theforgotteninitiative.org.